What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Double M Show, episode 18.
Woof!
We are moving along, and you already know it's the three hosts, the three amigos. We've been doing this for 18 shows now. First and foremost, we got Mike Nice. Mike, before you even say anything, where can they follow you on social media?
Whoa, you can follow me on Twitter at Mr. _ Mike Nice. And on IG, Mr. _ Mike Nice. That's what they call me, so that's what I go by.
That's what they call you?
That's what they call me, because I'm a nice guy. I don't know what you think.
I don't know about all of that.
Anyways, T-Mac, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at Tiara _ Mua.
How do you spell Mua?
For what?
It's M-U-A-H. And nobody does Mua like that. You did it mad rough and ugly. You got a Mua.
Mua.
All
right. How about Ma?
Is that how you kiss? That's what you do?
Come on, Ma. T-Mac. Every week.
Here we go.
Before we start,
act
I
like
say
you
T-Mac.
Girl, act like you're I giving your girl a little peck and just go, Mwah. Bye, honey. Just do that.
How about Ma? How about Ma?
Tell T-Mac to behave every episode.
I am behaving. It be y'all. Where can they find you at?
You know, you can follow me on Twitter at MarvTV_, or you can follow me on Instagram at MeezyDoesIt. That's MeezyDuzit. You know, no moi needed.
Yeah
the
you
extra
ain't
other
special.
Stuff.
I might not be.
What extra stuff, Mike?
I might not be.
The extra other stuff.
What's the extra other stuff? What's extra?
You got one H in there or two H's in the moi?
It's one H.
Okay, yeah.
So before you start jumping to conclusions.
I ain't jump anywhere in a long time.
You just did.
I'm fine. Thanks.
Let's just, you know what?
T-Mac.
Yes.
A lot has happened during this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We are here to discuss it. Can you please, you know, let the audience know what we're going to be talking about this week.
On tonight's show, our topics are so heavy that we got to give them 50-50 of tonight's show. So first and foremost, we're going to talk about, of course, I know everyone's probably wondering what's going on with the When They See Us Netflix new series. Now, you guys finished it, but I didn't. I still got to finish it. But we're going to definitely talk about that and, you know, the fact that it's based off of a true story and what kind of went on with that case and a lot of the racism and the neglect that happened. We really got to touch base on that. I really want to get your opinions with that as well. And then we're going to go into talking about a police officer in Jackson, Mississippi, who committed suicide for being accused of rape. Now, the reason why we're going to talk about this story is because a lot of the times when men, where you guys are out and you're in the club, and even if it's, you know, young boys too, the fake IDs and being in there underage and then, you know, meeting somebody. And then the whole point of, you know, if you do have a sexual encounter with someone in the club and they happen to be underage, it's considered rape. So this police officer was accused of rape and he committed suicide. So definitely going to talk about that. But let's begin with When They See Us, the Netflix hit series. I know we got a lot to talk about with that, but I do want to give a quick background story of kind of what went on with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so When They See Us, based off the true story of the Central Park Five. So this was way back 1989, a rape case of a woman who was jogging through Central Park, and she was brutally assaulted, raped, and left for dead, really, left for dead. So, these five young boys, we have Atron McCray, Kevin Richardson, Corey Wise, Yusuf Salam, and Raymond Santana. So, these five young boys between the ages of 14 and 16 at the time were interrogated by police, and they were threatened. They were just coerced into giving false confessions, basically linking them to a crime that they did not commit. So as everyone else knows, and as we know, they were convicted. They did serve time. between 7 and 14 years, right? Around I know there, the yep. oldest, Corey Wise, he served 14 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. And then the others served between 5 and 7 years, correct?
Right.
So again, losing out on their childhood, losing out on their lives.
Teenage something years.
Something that they would never get back. And the way the case was handled, you have... Even throughout the series, they show the prosecution just like... changing the storyline to make it fit so that the boys were, you know, a part of that rape. It was crazy. It was a lot going on, but definitely want to let you guys speak for a minute and get your opinion on the situation and shine a little bit more light on what happened with this case.
Yeah, so we're going to, you know, really focus on the Central Park Five, the five gentlemen that you mentioned. Obviously, we know that there is a Netflix. There's a Netflix series out there, and if you haven't seen it, you know, this series is very powerful. It cuts really deep, you know, for people of color, especially when you see this is, it'll be something that can really affect you and make you feel many type of emotions.
A lot of emotions, man.
But what the film does, it really humanizes these five kids and really puts us in their world and puts into perspective what happens after the cameras are off, after, you know, people get put away into crimes. What are they dealing with? What are their families dealing with? What happens afterwards? And that's what the whole film really brought about. And, you know, just want to invite everyone also, if you have seen the movie or you have any type of thoughts of the Central Park Five, you know, put in the chat here. We are on live currently right now. Join the conversation on how you feel. But watching this film over the weekend was tough.
Sure.
I couldn't even finish it. And what I did watch, I had to take breaks in between because when I watch things like this, I get really emotional. I get really upset. So, like, I have to, like, take a break and, like, go do something and then come back to it because that's how disturbing this case was, you know? Mike, what was
I'm
your
different,
input?
You know. I know some people, I've talked to you two, and you have to take breaks. I think Marv said he watched in two separate days.
Yeah.
I couldn't get up. Once I put it on the TV screen, I was stuck. I think I got up a few times to use the bathroom. I think I made a cup of tea. I think I drank some water because I was just hot and bothered. Like Marv said, a lot of different emotions going through me as I watched. And, you know, I don't think there wasn't really anything that could really pull me away from my couch while I was watching it because I was just stuck. You know, I'll be honest, I didn't have much information about the Central Park Five. I didn't have much knowledge about it. You know, you hear this documentary coming out and you see that you want to get more information. What is this story really? What is going on? What is taking place with the Central Park Five? And once I started watching, from the moment you start going through part one and really getting a story of what took place and what happened, it really just pulls you in and you feel such a connection, you know, especially being a black male myself, you see it, you feel a connection because you're put in a place where you kind of want to feel or start to feel or understand what these kids are going through. You're talking about teenage boys between 14 and 16 years old. And the interesting thing, if you watch that part one, you know, how each interrogation went. It was very different for each of them. You had one kid who's his father had to leave and his grandma was there, but his grandmother couldn't speak English, so she couldn't really be a part of it and help.
Raymond.
Then you had another boy whose mother was at work. He couldn't make it there in time. I think that was Yusef. You know, and she luckily got there and was able to, you know, stop the whole situation.
Made a confession tape. Yeah.
Then you had, you know, Antron, whose father
made him
because, you know, the police officers kind of pulled back to him, his father being in the system and what implications it could have on him is his son doesn't cooperate.
With Antron's case, you know, why I love this movie and so beautifully done is you saw the dynamic of what happened when his father made that decision.
Yeah.
His father felt guilty. Felt so guilty that he told his son a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, he told his son a huge mistake.
He felt it bad.
And then he leaves his family. And you go on through throughout the movie, it shows it. But if you also you do your research, Antron didn't have a relationship with his father afterwards when he came back. It's he never forgave his father for what he did, because throughout the movie, when his father went on stand, you know, his father didn't have a good case on stand as well. So a lot of things against him. You get to see all these aspects when you have prosecutors interrogating each single one of these kids, lying to them, forcing them to do
something. And it's tough because you really watch and you're like, if I'm this 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old kid, and in a last session, there's nobody there but me in a room with one or two police officers, detectives, hammering down on you, you know, basically forcing you to admit to something. And in a sense, they basically told him, if you say X, Y, and Z, and you're probably going to get out of here.
You can go home.
You know, they had them feeling like if you, and it's, these boys had no clue who each other was.
Nothing.
They're just saying, so Antron was there, right?
And Corey.
That's
they were
it.
Friends.
But they're talking, they're saying, the police officers are saying these guys' names. And at first, these kids, I don't know
who
these other boys are. But the police officers, the Texas, they're forcing these boys to put these other four guys in a situation that none of them. It was just, like I said, being a black male, I'm just imagining myself in that situation. What would I do? What can I do? I'm a young guy, young teenage boy who's scared for my life.
18 hours. You're there with 18 hours, no food.
Yeah,
no drink.
And Raymond was actually being interrogated for over 18 hours. He was being interrogated for like a day and a half. Like, and so he was hungry. You haven't fed these kids, you know, and you're just hammering down on them. And again, like Mike mentioned, they don't even know each other. They're like, who? I don't even like know who that person is. And they're making things up. They're making up, you know, what she was wearing. They're making up where they were. They're making things up just to get out of there and get home, because they're being told, if you confess to this crime, you can go home. And then if you think about it, it's like, how is it that if I confess to a crime, I can go home? So I don't have to pay the consequences for
this
crime?
That's what they made it feel like. Like, once the boys heard that if you sign this, if you say this, you know, in a sense, we'll clear you and get you out of here. I forgot the names. I keep switching up the names. Mm-hmm. The boy with the older sister who came.
That was Kevin Richardson. Mm-hmm.
You know, all he kept saying throughout the whole thing is he wants to go home. He want to go home. His sister shows up and she's trying to say, like, why is he going through this? And Kevin's to the point where I just want to go home, please. You know, his face is bruised up after getting
Kevin's
hit.
Kevin's the one who got hit in the face. With
he
the
just
cops helmet.
And if you're an older sister,
that picture against him saying, "Okay, how did Kevin get these scratches?"
Hey, first of all, I just want to say it wasn't a scratch.
Obviously,
and anybody in their right mind looking at him would say, "Okay, this boy clearly got hit in the face with something." And they kept trying to make it seem like, "Oh, she scratched him." That's not a scratch.
I mean, the bigger part of that, at least that section of the story, in a grander scheme of things, is just how, you know, you have a case where a white woman is raped in a park, and though they don't have all the full evidence, they don't have enough information and detail to really, you know, formulate a case, you see it from a side where the police, society, you know, I think in the comments, Trump has even mentioned, it's like, what can we do to pin this case on somebody? Obviously, you know, during this time, there was kids going through the park, a whole bunch of young black teenagers going through the park, doing a whole bunch of, you know, wilding out, like they say in the film. Mm-hmm. So the police, the detectives, DA, whoever, in a sense, it's easy for them to take that situation and say, hey, now we have something to easily pin on this case, and now we can run with it and put this situation on somebody, blame somebody in a sense, to take the fall for this woman, white woman, getting raped in a park. They weren't going to let it. This wasn't going to case that was going to get brushed under the rug. That woman was raped, assaulted, left for dead, nerve damage, skull bashed in, all different. She couldn't walk for, she was in a coma. You know, United States of America was not going to let that just brush under the rug.
Do you think it also had a lot to do that because she was a white woman, too?
Absolutely.
Oh, without a doubt.
Like that was where a lot of the emphasis was put, like, with the media. It was like, oh, this, like, this white woman was attacked by these five black
For the
kids,
media, it was perfect. It was a perfect.
And it was just like their perfect little story, but I do feel as if, you know, if that woman were black, it would have been like, oh, she was probably a prostitute, or oh, she probably was on drugs, and she probably won't. I feel like it would have been a completely different storyline.
At the end of the day, no disrespect, but they didn't really care for that white woman's life. If they cared for that white woman's life, I don't know her name on top of my head right now, but if they cared for her life, they would have found out who did it.
Her name was Trisha.
Trisha. They cared for Trisha, they would have found out who really did this to Trisha.
Because
the evidence, there was none. The only evidence there was is that they signed their names on that paper and they confessed on camera. There was no evidence whatsoever. If there's a white woman that you really care about, you're going to find out who it is. And that's what brings up the movie title, When They See Us. We're going to pin five black kids because America, white people, in my opinion, they see little black kids or black males, black females as monsters. We're not humans.
And that's... Hey, go ahead. Sorry.
We're not human. We're dehumanized to them. So if you can put things on, you know, African American kids, it's okay. That's what they do. That's how we see them anyway.
They're the
it
only
makes
ones
sense.
Capable of committing this crime, and that
which ties into Jovan's question, where he asks, "What do you guys feel about Trump taking out the full page ad to give them the death penalty?" And Wes says, "How can you look at children and say give them the death penalty?"
That in itself, death penalty for children is wild, but at the same time, kind of reaching back to what I was saying before and how you said, you know, they pinned it on these kids. It wasn't about trying to find who actually did it. It was a, when I say perfect situation, and I think they alluded to this in that part one of the film. I forgot the name of the lead detective lady who was handling everything in the beginning. Once she said, oh, these kids were rioting in the park, It doesn't really matter what else happened. It doesn't even matter what. We have a bunch of black kids rioting in a park around that area. We got what we need to set up a case to put names to the rape and possibly put somebody behind bars.
She should rot in hell.
As soon as they put two to two together, or rape happened, kids were rioting in the park. We got what we need to have a case and put these kids down.
Because initially, she
that's their
said,
justice.
Those aren't kids. Those are suspects. Like, don't let them go, because they were going to let them go.
Right.
And she goes, no, she's the one who turned that whole situation left, you know? And then with the whole Trump situation, he not only put out a full page advertisement requesting and demanding to bring back the death penalty, he also did several like TV interviews just calling for the harshest punishment for those who were accused, knowing that these are kids being accused of this crime. You know, he wanted them to have the worst punishment, to suffer the most, like, maximum time, maximum punishment for kids.
And when you look at this, right, when you see what happens to Trump, you see what happens with Linda Fairstein, they all benefited from these kids going to jail. They all went on to do bigger and better things in life. Mm-hmm. Linda Fairstein became a bestseller author about crimes and criminals.
Sex crimes at that.
We see what happened to Donald Trump.
He became the president.
20 years later, he becomes the president of the United States. So it shows you how they see us, what they think of us. And the reason why this movie is so powerful is because when you see movies like this, right, you're like, damn, that was a wild time. I can't believe that happened.
And it still, like, does.
But right now, you're watching, you're like, this happens right now. This is just one case. This is shit that, excuse my language, but this is the things that happen every day. Every day right now, black boys, black girls have a target on their backs. And they get put in situations that are unfathomable. And if you don't have the right education, if you don't know how to, you know, if you don't know your rights, it can put you in a situation where you're lost. So you find yourself like the five Central Park boys. And it's disgusting. It is sick. Later on during the show, I have, you know, tips and series of knowing your rights and what you should do and what you should not do, because they don't teach you that in the hood. You know, obviously, luckily, when we're young, most black kids already know, okay, hey, be careful with the police. Right. Yep. This is how you're supposed to talk to the police. This is how you're supposed to act. Well, most black kids should, most black kids should get that education at a young age, because When I saw this movie, a thought that came up to my mind, and I'm going to bring it, I'm going to ask you guys about it, is when you're a person of color, do you get to really be a kid? No. When you're 12, 13, 14 years old, do you have the luxury of being a kid like everyone else?
When you say, elaborate a little bit, you say being a kid like everybody else.
As a kid, you should be able to go to the park, have fun, and have no worries about being hassled or anything. As a black kid, you could be at the wrong place at the wrong time. You can't say that for privilege. There's no such thing as being at the wrong place. You can be legit at the wrong place at the wrong time, doing nothing, and then boom. You get put into a situation, and now you have to live with that at 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, knowing, hey, how I move could get me locked up. How I move can get me killed. What's your thoughts on that?
And if you notice in the Netflix series too, when the kids see the police coming, they all immediately think, you know, run, 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 you know. Granted, they were doing like bad things, but like the type of running they were doing from the cops was like running for their lives.
Absolutely.
Because they knew if they got caught, they knew if one cop got a hold of them, like it was over. And it's like, even in, this is 1989 this took place, you know, and even to this present day, like you mentioned, Marv, young black kids growing up, we are constantly taught to be careful around the police. Now, these are the same people you call for an emergency. These are the same people who come around when you need, or who are supposed to come around when you need help, but yet we have this guard up against them, like, there's no trust there, you know? There's no, I feel comfortable around the police. It's like, even when you see a cop car driving by in your rear view or in front of you, your heart skips a beat. You get nervous, yeah. You know? Not that you're doing anything, but because you know that something can happen out of nothing.
Absolutely.
And I think that as a kid growing up, like, even as a child growing up and going to the playground, like, if there were cops in the area, it's like, all right, guys, like, you know, simmer down. If we were laughing loud, you know, you don't have that same luxury of being able to just think and do whatever. You definitely were taught at a young age to be cautious, to be aware of your surroundings, to be mindful of when the police are around. And I think that as a child, like, you shouldn't have to have that kind of worry. You shouldn't have to be thinking like that. You should be able to, you know, live as a kid and enjoy your childhood.
And it stretches even far wider than just police. You know, in my personal opinion, you know, growing up in my childhood, I went to a predominantly white school. And in my predominantly white school, me being one of 9, 10, 11 black students in a class, even when we congregated in the cafeteria, outside on a bench, you could see the extra eyes on us just for being together. Same students in the school, going to the same classes, getting the same education, but a couple of me and my few other black friends hanging together, you knew the extra eyes were on us. You knew that people were watching to see what we're doing. I remember one case where we stayed after school, probably hanging out, playing basketball, waiting for the late bus. and we was probably walking down on the side of a school, and it must have been a parent, white parent, waiting to pick up their child or whoever they were doing. But we just walking by their car, walking to go back inside the school. And you can hear as we walk by, she clicked on all of her doors to lock at that instant. As soon as she glanced over and saw who we were, you know, that's the childhood that I went through, being one of a few in a predominantly white school. And, you know, everybody's childhood experience is different. I see Tatiana came on and said innocence in childhood is a luxury, unfortunately. And I agree 100%. You know, kids, black, brown kids, kids of mine, they don't share that same luxury. Especially if you're living or going to school in a certain area, living in a certain area, it doesn't matter. You're a child. Depending on how you look, the life you live as an adolescent is different. Very different.
Right. A couple of points I want to bring up. Thank you for everyone commenting. We're going to try to get as much as possible. Daph, just think about Tamir Rice, even Trayvon. They were not treated as murdered children. They were considered as thugs. When a black child passes away, in the media, it's about what did he do? What did he do to get himself in that situation? Or they post their mugshots. Or they post a shot of them that's not a celebration, but something that dehumanizes the person. What did Trayvon do to get George Zimmerman to kill him? Why was Tamir Rice playing with a toy gun? All of these situations is what did this black kid do to get himself killed, and not the opposite of why was this black beautiful child taken away from us.
And not even just that, they also just bring up irrelevant things like, oh, they cut class, they skipped school, they couldn't live with it. It's just a whole bunch of things that are non-factors.
And that's the same thing that came up in the documentary.
That has nothing to do with the fact that they were murdered. There is no reason why any of that justifies someone else taking their life.
So, in the documentary, it's a rape case about a woman who got assaulted and raped.
Right.
Corey's on stand,
yeah,
and they're questioning him about cutting class and missing school. And him as a kid, which he had a lot of sense to do this, why am I getting questioned about class and skipping class? What does that have to do with my case? He kept saying that over and over again because it's the honest truth. You're trying to pin me skipping class, you know, in the way it's portrayed in the film. He skipped class to go meet up with his girl to get some fried chicken and chill on the side and hang out. You know
what the crazy part about that is, too? They completely overlook in that one scene, the fact that Corey couldn't read or write.
Didn't matter.
How did he write a confession that you say he wrote and signed?
The evidence didn't matter.
They had who they wanted.
And she said it when she's like, didn't you write this confession? Can you read what you wrote? And he's looking at it. He's like, I can't even read this, lady. I don't even know what this says. So how, if he can't read it.
Didn't matter. They had who they wanted.
How could he have wrote it?
They had who they wanted. You know?
And
but it gets overlooked because he was cutting school and skipping class. Like, it's just the blatant neglect.
That's the stuff.
And overlooking the clear facts. That's what gets me, like, so frustrated with this whole situation, you know?
Yeah, so there's a stat, right? 1 in 3 young black men born in 2001 are most likely to face imprisonment compared to 1 to 17 white men. Which is right there, freaking ridiculous. But then, look at this one. 1 in 18 black women born in 2001 most likely to face imprisonment compared to 1 to 111 white women. So, and imprisonment doesn't mean you're guilty of anything. You just get incarcerated. See, our blackness right now is being criminalized.
Right.
We already, like I said before, have a target on our back. It doesn't matter if you're innocent or guilty. Innocent before proving guilty. When you are black, you are automatically guilty, and then you have to prove your innocence. And that's how it's been in this justice system that we are living in right now.
That's very true.
And again, you know, when they had that scene in the series where, you know, years later, you know, the new attorney sat down with, what's her name again?
Linda Fairstein.
She sat down with Linda talking about, like, we have new evidence that, you know, can possibly link this rape case to somebody else. Linda was not trying to hear. They even talked to, I feel like, the lead detective from the case. Neither one of them were trying to hear any type of new evidence or theory or possibility. They just were set in stone, like, look, justice was served no matter how you want to look at it. Now, years later, dig up new evidence. Justice was served, and these five black teens are serving time or served time, and nothing else matters. Like, these people were set in stone with how things turned out. Linda wouldn't even look back at the case. She was set in, it didn't matter to her. When you have situations, some of these situations that still go on today where people are wrongfully, you know, accused or face jail time knowing that they didn't do anything. How many times did Corey have to sit through his parole hearing?
Right.
And he had a choice to say, look, I can admit to a lie and say I did it, whatever. And they would have let him walk. But the pride in him was like, look, I'm not saying that I did anything because I know I didn't. And if you're going to keep me in jail, it is what it is.
That's the, and not to get sidetracked, but that's just how shitty this justice system is. Like, most people that are in jail right now take a plea. They take a plea because just of the, off the fact that if I take this to trial and I do get found guilty, I'm going to be serving a larger sentence than if I just take this plea, even if I'm guilty or not guilty.
They didn't even want the plea. They didn't even want the plea.
No, I'm saying, I'm just talking about just the justice system in general. That's how people go. So imagine you're black and you already know everything's against you. Most people just take the plea. And just like, I'm just going to take the plea because if I go to trial and I'm found guilty,
it's worse.
It's going to be worse.
Worse.
Yeah. That's what the justice system is.
It's crazy. I do want to talk a little bit about the acquittal. So in 2002, the victims, they're proving to be the victims in the situation. They're proving their innocence and the racism of the NYPD and the American legal system. So with the new evidence that comes up, and crazy how Corey Wise runs into the actual rapist in prison. God. Like, that right there to me, like, that just threw me for a loop.
Without Corey running into him, we're not talking about this film right now.
Right.
We're not talking about five innocent black men right now.
Right.
We're talking about four or five black men that are out that were accused of rape.
So the guy, Reyes, is it Misha Reyes? Is that how you pronounce his name?
The rapist.
Yeah. Reyes, yes. So he later confesses to the crime out of guilt, and the DNA proves that it was him, and then all along that these boys were telling the truth. And like you said, Mike and Marv, the NYPD, Linda and the lead detectives, they did not want to hear that. Like, they did not want to believe that they were wrong.
It didn't matter. They got what, like I've been saying, they got what they wanted in the case. The boys that they put on trial, justice was served to them, and they faced jail time. They moved on.
NYPD officers that did the interrogations and coerced all these false, you know, confessions, nothing happened to them.
Of course not.
The NYPD at that time and even after the acquittal, they never admitted to anything, never faced any consequences for their actions, never, not once, not even an apology.
Once?
I mean, they can't face any, nothing, they can't do anything because the kids did admit to the wrongdoing. So whatever happened, they can just say,
we
just went by the law. You know, there's nothing you can really put, unfortunately, on the NYPD. NYPD is not here to protect and serve. Police in general, from my eyes, are not here to protect and serve. They're just here for order. That's it. Control order. Go by their book of law and order. For us, they're not here to protect the serve. You said it earlier, T-Mac. You don't think of calling the police when you're in trouble.
Right. You get scared, like, oh my God, they're going to think about that I did it. You
calling
know?
Your folks. You think about calling your friends or something like that. Police, we don't have the luxury to think, okay, let me call the police and think that they're going to be on my side.
And give you me can the call benefit the, right. of the doubt.
If something happens, and my last option is the police, I'm thinking, oh boy, you might find something on me. We might try to switch things up. Like,
and that's tough. You shouldn't fear calling the police for help because you don't know how the situation is going to flip. Like, you could be in a situation where you need help and somehow, some way it flips back to, okay, but sir, what did you do? What is your involvement in it? Do you have any involvement in it? And that's just the reality of situations back then and today.
You brought that up because that's exactly what happened to Antron's father when he stepped outside to speak with an officer. He said, hey, like, there's someone I can speak with. Like, my son didn't do this. And then and him trying to speak up and, you know, help his son out, it gets flipped on him. Like, hey, you know, didn't you serve time too? Like, did your employer know about that? And it's just like, wait, what? Like, I'm not even the one, you know, in question here. I'm coming to you as a parent concerned about my son.
Even,
and the situation gets flipped on him.
Even Corey walking down the street with Yusef and that whole scene where they came for Yusef, but because Corey is with him, they're kind of like, hey, in a sense, you talking to a young 16-year-old boy, a police officer, you coming downtown too. What is he going to say? No? What is he going to run from them? Just because he was there walking with Yusef, they are automatically looking at him and brought him along too.
Yeah.
And he had, in a sense,
nothing to do with it.
And they took advantage of him because
he was the oldest.
Because
they knew he could get it the worst.
The thing is, there was no evidence on none of them, right? And the case, they were going to lose this case because there was no evidence. The mom took Yusef away. But Corey was the missing piece. If you remember watching, Linda knew Corey was the missing piece to tie everything together to make a strong case. Corey, you know, I'm not too familiar if he had, you know, we knew he couldn't read. I'm not too familiar if he had any learning disabilities or whatnot, but the police saw something in him where they knew they could really take advantage and flip the whole
thing. You can just tell by his character that he wasn't all the way.
Right.
Played it there. Well.
Shout out
to the actor who did a great job.
And I feel like, you know, him being that way, it kind of put like a bigger target on his back because they knew that they could take advantage of him and they can scare him even more for the simple fact that, you know, he couldn't read and he wasn't in school. So he not only lacked an education, he had a bigger disadvantage than the other boys did. And, you know, I feel like that is another reason why he took such a big hit. Not only was he the oldest, too, but he definitely had somewhat of a disadvantage because he was caught blindsided. He was sleeping, waiting for Yusef, and then gets kicked, thrown, dragged in the room out of nowhere. He didn't even see it coming, whereas the other boys were sitting in there, and they knew something was wrong.
Right.
You know, but I do want to talk about, before we move on to our next topic, I want to talk about, you know, the settlement that they took. And I know, Marv, you had, you know, a lot to say about that, with it being, they were fighting for the settlement for a while, and they ended up getting a settlement of $41 million. But again, the idea of them having to split that, you want to touch base on that, Marv?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want people to see the $41 million as a win.
Right.
That's not a win.
They lost their childhood. That's time you would just never get back.
I see the $41 million as slavery. It's just, oh, we just bought another black person. That's how much we're worth. We're just worth $41 million. Here's the cash. Split it in between y'all and end it. It's not like that.
And you got to remember, on top of that, before they even got the settlement, New York wasn't trying to give them anything.
Right.
The mayor before, I think it was Mayor Bloomberg, he was not trying to reach a settlement with these guys.
But the mayor who did reach the settlement, he said, like, in his campaign, if I am elected mayor, then I am going to have a settlement for these boys.
And here's a reason why, you know, we preach Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. And we see things like this, and it shows us that Black Lives don't matter. So we're saying, what, $41 million between the five men. split between them, and then you know you have the lawyers and everything that got to eat in between it. All right. I look at another case. White woman, Erin Andrews, well-known sportscaster, has been on ESPN, Fox. Some of you guys may know who she is. Couple years back, you know, she was in a hotel, naked, and some guy, stalker, whatsoever, took some pictures of her. You know, she sued, took the hotel and the man to court. She ended up with a settlement. A couple years later, $55 million. So let's
try a couple photos.
For some nudes, white woman nudes, or black men's lives being taken away. She got $55 million.
For one person.
So don't talk to me about no $41 million. Don't talk to me about, oh, at least they got some money at the end. Because it just shows, once again, that people think that you can just throw us money and everything will be all right.
And it makes up for it. Because they got the settlement for $41 million. But I think also the mayor had said that he would give them $1 million for each year that they spent in prison. And I just feel like you're trying to throw money at a situation where it's like you can't get that time back. They will never
the families,
get that childhood the back. Got. And then it's, again, even leading up into our next topic, like once you are tagged with that rape title, nothing is the same because you have the people who obviously who didn't believe it. And then you had those people who were like, they did it. You know, like you put that association with their name and you took their childhood away. That's not right. And you can't, no amount of money can rectify that.
Yeah. And you think about the, you know, Corey who spent the most years in jail, but the other four who got out between like 5 and 7 years, those years that they were out before, you know, Reyes came out and admitted and the settlement, all that. These guys are living lives struggling to register as sex offenders, which you're a felon, you're a registered sex offender. What kind of life can you really live? You're always, any job you apply to, anywhere you go, on top of the fact that your case was seen, you know, almost all around the world. It was a huge case. So everybody knows you as first the guy who supposedly raped a white woman in a park. You're a registered sex offender and you're a felon. All of that's on your case. All of that's on you. You're living a life of, I mean, if you watch the documentary, you see what these guys are going through, trying to find jobs, trying to, you know, I think in Santana Jr.'s case, you know, trying to talk to a girl, you know, coming home, whole new life, father with a new family. Antron, his father's sick. You know, these guys are coming home to situations, you know, where they're trying to find their own way in life now, and they're struggling with everything. It's just tough to see. And then you get to the whole settlement and how Marvin's going on, and how I think Hov just said no amount of money in the world can replace the time spent in jail and the time taken away from their childhood and everything they lost. It's a tough situation. This, like I said, I watched this documentary Sunday afternoon with not much prior knowledge to this whole situation of the Central Park Five. And I've been in some kind of feeling some type of way and different kind of emotions ever since I watched it, because that could be me. That could have been me.
Also, just want to, and please guys interject when I list off a couple of things here, just rules, your rights, knowing your rights, especially for people of color. This is for everyone, but people of color especially, you know, sometimes we just don't know our rights. And we saw what happened to these, you know, these five kids at the time when they didn't know their rights, or their parents didn't know their rights and whatnot, and it got them into this situation. First and foremost, you do not have to let your police at your crib unless they have a search warrant or if it's like a kidnapping. If you allow them to enter, anything that could incriminate you could be used against you, because right away you have waived your Fourth Amendment rights.
Don't let them in.
Don't let them in. Unless they have a search warrant, do not let them in, because once you do, it's over.
They can find anything, or things can be planted. Things can go any type of way. So continue.
If there is police conduct, misconduct, be a good white eyewitness and always write down what you're seeing. If you see any type of misconduct whatsoever, write it down, record it. You know, we're seeing now that recording everything has been, you know, big in these past couple of years. But you must write down everything that's going on. You need to, even if it doesn't involve you, because otherwise, you know, it's your word against the police, a band of brothers. So make sure, or sisters, make sure you understand those rights. Also, you always have the right. This is so, you always have the right to remain silent. If you ever get arrested and the police want to interrogate you, assert your Sixth Amendment right to legal counsel and shut up. If you don't know what's going on, you don't want to incriminate yourself, say you have your right to legal counsel and don't say anything. Anything you say will be used against you. That's so important because sometimes, you know, you get nervous. Police come, you start yabbing. That all gets recorded. That all gets written down. If you don't know what's going on in the situation, just be quiet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Clarify your status. Determine if you are free to go. Ask the officers, are you detaining me? Am I under arrest? Am I free to go? If you are requesting a legal counsel, recommend asserting this once your lawyer arrives, because your legal counsel can clarify this as well. So making sure you let the police know, hey, are you arresting me? Are you detaining me? You see that sometimes in videos. So you understand your status with the police. If you are stalked by the police, once again, you do not have to talk to them. Only in limited circumstances do you ever have to talk to the police. So as a rule of thumb, if you are questioned, try not to talk too much. Keep the conversation simple and avoiding implicating yourself. I have a couple more here. This goes back to the film that we just watched. Do not be intimidated into giving up your constitutional rights. Police officers give anxiety, stress, and duress on purpose to try to get you to speak with coercion, which is very illegal. So stand up for your Fourth Amendment rights and other legal rights will always be your best bet. It's tough. That one is tough because especially when we've seen what happened in the 80s, you know, they didn't give them food. They didn't give them water.
But I think back to that situation, how in a couple of those scenes, especially with Corey, first officer came in and smacked him around. Right. Smacked him around. Then the next officer comes in. I could help you. I can get you out of this. Oh my goodness. Like the second cop who came in tried to act like he don't know what's going on. That his other buddy who just came before him didn't tense up the situation to make him feel some type of way. It's
a lot, but we do have to move on to our last topic with wrapping this up.
So, one thing, sorry. Yes. This one's big, too, because people don't know about this one. If you are driving a car and you get pulled over, you obviously have to show your driver's license and registration. But if you are the passenger, you do not have to show your license at all. They do not have the right to ask for your license. Only the person who is driving the car. That's another important thing, because that's just bringing more people involved that has not a situation that doesn't have to do with you. So, you know, keep some of these things in mind. Know your rights. Know your regulations. Spread the word. Teach your younger brothers, your sisters, you know, the ones that are coming up under you, because this is very important.
It is. But we have another situation in Jackson, Mississippi, where a police officer committed suicide by shooting himself in his car on the side of the highway. And the reason why he did that is because he was accused of raping a 15-year-old girl. So the background story to this is, you know, this officer who they don't put his name out there. He was out, I guess, like at a bar or a club, you know, being an adult. Nothing wrong with that. And, you know, you have a situation where these teenagers get in with these fake IDs. And, of course, if you meet someone and they're in a 21-plus, you know, environment,
right.
You assume they're 21-plus. However, again, with the fake ID, she wasn't. I guess some things went on. And, of course, as we know, it's still considered rape. So, you know, he was put on leave and then he was under investigation. So that just brought about a lot of stress to him. And he ended up killing himself. And then his family came out and said, you know, this was a really good man. He was a good police officer. And he was a black police officer, too.
Right.
And, you know, and he killed himself over, again, being tagged with that title of rape. It really can change your life. It can change everything about you. It can change the people around you. It changes the way you're treated, you know. And I just want to know, coming from you guys, like, what advice can you give men, you know, out at these clubs? And you assume everyone's 21 plus because that's the environment that you're in. But I feel like we're in a day and age where you can't assume anything anymore. But what can men do going forward to kind of protect themselves and basically receive some sort of validation that whoever they're talking to, whoever they want to have, you know, this one night stand with, or even, you know, have a, you know, situation with, is 21 plus.
So real quick with that situation, I read on the story, you know, he was seeing that girl frequently for 6 months, for 6 months prior. And, you know, that's when it becomes unacceptable.
Yeah.
When
he has to have some idea.
Right. I don't care.
But what about 6 months?
Yeah. I don't care how long. I mean, I don't care if she was she had a fake ID and a 21 plus. You're messing with this female for 6 months. You're not asking questions. You're not,
you know, 6 months.
She, right? What do you do from 8 to 3? Are you in school or at work?
That's,
you know,
that's too. That's way too much. But say if it was just, you know, we're talking about just you meet her at the club. We're in an environment now, like you mentioned, where this is the Me Too movement. There's all these things around us that as men, you need to understand who you are, who you're dealing with, and what's going on. Because at the end of the day, if you're a man and you're taking a woman out, first and foremost, you got to make sure she's safe, right? If you're going out with someone younger than you, that's automatically not safe. It's not right. Safe to be being an adult. It's not safe for either of you. It's not safe for the adults. Not safe for the teenager. But first and foremost, you're taking a woman out. I don't care if you're drinking, whatever it may be. Safety needs to be the first thing. Who is this girl? Is she safe enough for me to be in her house? Is she safe enough for me to bring her to my home? You know. Then obviously we're talking about consent and whatnot. But safety's first. You have to be really reckless. I know it's tough because they got in a 21 plus, so you automatically assume they're of age. But it's so hard. But it's pretty reckless to be messing with a teenager more than once in that situation.
Yeah, six months is wild. That's a long period of time to not really have much knowledge about who you're dealing with, who you're messing with. You know, I think in a situation like these, kind of similar to what Marv is saying, in this day and age, you got to gather as much information as possible. Like, I'm not saying you need to get like down to the detail of every aspect of someone's life, but like,
you should have a good idea.
Do you think a man should go? Like, what?
But like the basics. If you meet somebody and you're trying to get to know them,
or like what are the basics to avoid situations like this? Because this isn't the first time that's happened. Do you guys remember when the same type of scandal happened with Akon, where like he met a girl in the club and
I vaguely remember.
And he wrote like a song about it. He was like, she had a 21 plus ID. I thought she was, you know, like he's like, I didn't know that I was a little girl. And he received a lot of criticism, but it's like, what do you do, like, outside of this situation with this police officer, but what do you do when you're a guy and you meet a girl, like, in a 21-plus club, and you believe she's of age, and you end up doing something with her, and you end up getting in trouble, and it's like, you know, well, I didn't know, like, she lied to me, but like I said, at the end of the day, according to the law, that's still considered rape.
It is considered rape.
Yeah.
So having that knowledge, having, like you just said, this is not something that is new.
Right.
You need to understand who you're dealing with.
Gather as much information as possible.
I'm not saying interrogate the person that you're with. In this situation, we're talking about a female. I'm not saying interrogate them, but understand who you're dealing with. Okay. What do you do? I mean, one of the first things when you talk to someone is you ask them,
what do you do for work?
What do you do?
Like, what do you do? You're at school? What's
your situation? Like, that's one of the first conversations you should have. It's small talk. By small talk, you should understand who you're dealing with. If you're just in the club drunk and not really knowing what you're doing, that's unsafe, whether the person's of age or not. That's just unsafe because now you're bringing someone home that you have no idea who you're dealing with. You're just off of lust, alcohol, whatever.
And what makes it worse now in this day and age, like, you ever saw that meme when it was like 12-year-olds back then, 12-year-olds today? They be looking like they... Young girls in middle school be looking like they could be in college.
Right. I'll give the, you know, for men who are been in that situation, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that, the, you know, the woman that they're dealing with must have looked.
You still have to gather information. Like I said, a night out, quick little thing, a quick conversation could happen about, you know, so where you from? It's quick information that you could get. Like I said, this level, maybe you're super drunk. Like Marv said, that's unsafe. Where you have no really control of the situation, where you going, who you taking with, that's a very wild and kind of unsafe situation. But if you know you see somebody out, I think the best thing somebody can do is just gather some piece of information so that you know who exactly you're talking to, who you're dealing with in a sense. It's not a complete stranger. Obviously, you meet somebody on a night out, that's one night, and then over time, you get to know somebody. Like in this situation, you're talking 6 months of them being with this teenage girl. That's wild. That's wild. But information has to be gathered from the jump. That's how I feel it should go.
I agree. Let's take it to the comments.
So McCoy says, I don't know how he's being criticized for being the victim of her scam. I don't quite understand what he means by that, if you can elaborate.
Maybe
unless you guys understand what
I think when he's saying,
because she lied.
She's portraying,
he fell victim to her lie.
Yeah, she's portraying somebody who is, she portrayed an older woman, 21 plus ID. You're portraying someone you're not. That's her scam, making somebody believe she's
of age, talk to you.
She broke the law, whatever, getting into a club where she had no business being. So I guess that's the other side of looking at it, where, you know, he fell into her trap of coming off as a grown woman when she really wasn't.
We get that. But at the end of the day, you have to do your due diligence. And on top of this, what gives this individual, you know, rest in peace. It's unfortunate he killed himself. And that's just horrific in itself. But what gives him no excuse, on top of the 6 months, he was a police officer.
Right. You couldn't run a background check.
You have a certain set of skills to understand what you're doing.
He has the tools to dig deeper.
He does.
He has more tools than the average person does.
Physically with tools. Yeah. Like he has mental tools that he's learned through training. He has physical tools that his... That's something, man.
Like you just said, it's an unfortunate situation that he had to take his life just due to the stress that he probably endured over the whole situation. But, like, you know, Wes just came in and said, 6 months is a long time to not fully... 6 months talking to someone, you're dating. You're basically dating if you're talking to somebody that long. And to not have any real knowledge of who you're essentially dating and being with, it's a red flag. Unfortunately, it's a red flag. I feel bad for him and his family. He took his life. It's an unfortunate situation. But the red flag is still raised that, yes, she ran a scam, like, you know, Devard is saying, and being underage with a fake ID. But 6 months, you gotta figure out what's going on.
Right. I agree. Well, guys, definitely be more aware. Definitely be a little bit more cautious, because at the end of the day, the law is still a law and it's still considered rape. Don't know if they're going to change this, fix it, adjust it to make it so, you know, guys aren't being tricked if they have no knowledge of this. But again, you definitely want to make sure that you're being safe and that you're being aware. And definitely tune in and watch When They See Us. It's definitely a really good Netflix series. I would recommend it. Definitely educational, lets you know what went on, what still goes on, and so you're aware of those things as well. But Marv,
before we close it off, because this was heavy
episode for real,
but I want to ask you guys, What's something great that's happened to you this past week? Or something uplifting that you can speak on that's happened to you this week?
I like that.
And people in the comments as well. Spread some love. What's something good
there's that... There's something good out there that happened to
that's
you.
That's happened to you this
week. T-Mac, you got anything?
You go first.
Well, you know me. It never has to be anything crazy and great. You know, it's always uplifting to see another day of life. To have people around that I love and support. I got a lot of friends and family who have weddings taking place in the next couple of weeks and months. Yes, so I definitely want to shout out all of them who are taking a step, you know, committing to somebody who they love, they cherish. You know, it's a beautiful thing when two people get married who really love and care for each other. And I have the luxury and the honor and the privilege of attending and being a part of some of these weddings. So those are things that are uplifting that I can't wait to be a part of and share those experiences with my friends, my family. I look forward to those.
Nice.
Mark. We have McCoy saying Zouave.
Uh-huh.
Did you go?
I didn't know, but my cousin Duvall was telling me it was a great time. I heard his story.
Mike went at least.
Why? You
know that.
Why? Why you say that?
Because you know that you be okay.
Here we go. Here we go. I'd be okay having a good time. You right.
No, you be... All right, I ain't even going to go there. Because if it I go lit. There...
It looked lit.
It sure did. It sure did.
It looked lit.
I heard mixed reviews.
Why didn't you go?
Because I didn't want to.
You know, you wasn't feeling...
Actually, okay, it was my cousin's birthday, so we went out to dinner, and we went out to celebrate for her birthday. So that was something fun and uplifting that I did. A lot of family came out, and we had a really good time, and she had a really good birthday, so that was fun. But, Marv, what about you?
Wes said, you know, it was a great time.
I believe Wes.
And I know Wes. He knows how to have a good time.
Sure I heard does. Mixed reviews. I heard some people saying it was good. Some people saying it wasn't as good as before. So.
For people that don't know what that is.
Mike, explain.
Mike, y'all don't get it. I didn't go, nor have I ever been. So I don't have the knowledge.
You know
for
what?
People that don't know what it is.
You asking me? I never been, nor have I gone, and I didn't go this year.
He's sitting over there talking like he know everything about it.
I never said that. I never said that.
Can you explain to the people what it is? I never been.
You know, Mark.
It's like a carnival, pretty much a carnival event. You know, people go out, celebrate their culture, and have a good time.
Ain't you West Indian?
Yeah.
I just thought you would just give a brief. Exactly. I'm so sorry.
And wasn't
guys.
He the one?
I am West Indian,
like,
but I've never
time,
been,
like,
nor do I.
To get my
I didn't ask if you've been.
Or...
I asked to just give out a description of the event.
All right, so do what you said.
I don't have. I don't have a description of the event because I don't have knowledge of it. But all right.
Oh, Wes said it's because the weather didn't hold up. I agree. I think some people were a little mad that it was kind of chilly outside.
And I teach. I think that's why. GED classes. And I have
something good that happened to me this
GED.
Week.
So that was pretty dope.
There
moment.
You go, Mark. You know, give him
yes,
back
sir.
To
yes,
the
sir.
Community.
So that's dope. That's something good. But appreciate everyone watching. Appreciate everyone listening. This is the Double M Show. You got Mike Nice.
That is your boy.
You got T-Mac.
Thank you.
I'm DJ Meez. This is where sports and the urban life collide. We'll see you guys again. Right here, 8 p.m. live on Tuesdays. You already know what to do. Make sure you spread this show. Tell your friend.
Tell
your
friend
to tell another
Absolutely.
Friend.
Tell somebody else.